Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Thursday, March 12, 2015. I'm Senator Mia Costello. I'd like to welcome Senator Ellis and Vice Chair Senator Giesel. It's 1:30, if I hadn't mentioned that. Also, I would like to thank our recording secretary, Carrie, and our LIO operator, Alex. Without your assistance, we wouldn't be able to run our committee. And also, I'd like to thank my committee aide, Weston Eiler. Today on the agenda, we will have several items. We will be reviewing 12 of the governor's appointments for boards and commissions. This is the committee's second hearing related to boards and commissions appointees. So the intent is to hear from the appointees, take any public testimony on each one, and set the nominations aside in case committee members have any questions, but more so for the ease of the committee to take all of the boards and commissions appointments and move them out in one future meeting. So I wanted to just make sure that our nominees understand the purpose behind holding them. The committee has been provided with the board rosters for each one, fact sheets, the appointees' resumes, and those are all found in your committee packets that were provided to your aides. So following the boards and commissions appointees, we will be under bills previously heard, including Senate Bill 53, Advanced Practice Registered Nurse. We will be passing that bill out of committee, along with Senate Bill 39, the repeal of the Film Development Tax Credit. We will be moving that out of committee. And then Senate Bill 60, establishing a marijuana control board, we will be taking public testimony. I would also like to welcome Senator Stevens. Thank you. So our first board this afternoon is the Alaska State Board of Public Accountancy. We are reviewing two nominees. One is Andre Horton of Anchorage, who's a certified public accountant seat. He's applying or being, his name is being considered for that. It's a board of seven seats. And Andre, if you would like to present to the committee yourself and why you're interested in serving on this board, and then we'll take any questions. Andre, if you're listening, you'll have to unmute yourself. Okay, so I guess Andre is not available at the moment. Next, for the Alaska State Board of Public Accountancy, Jeffrey Johnson of Fairbanks for the certified public accountant seat. Jeffrey? What? Oh, brief it is. Good afternoon. The committee's been called back to order. This, again, is the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and as I mentioned earlier, we are reviewing the governor's appointments for boards and commissions with the intent to hold the nominees until a further date when we have the entire group, and the committee has been provided with the entire packet, which is a large binder with all the resumes and the information about the board. So my intention then is to go through these. We will hear from those who have called in. We're hoping that all were online or here, but we will just go with the flow. So next is the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. The applicant is Ellen Ganley of Fairbanks for the public seat. This is one of five seats on the board. Ellen?
Yes. I've been on the ABC board now for about 18 years, and I've found the challenge of balancing public safety and the public health of the citizens of Alaska with the viability of the liquor industry to be really challenging and quite rewarding. In the last 3 years, we spent a lot of time revising Title IV, and I'm just very proud of the document that came out. I think that's about it.
Well, thank you, Ellen. I certainly appreciate all the work in the Title IV rewrite. I know that's been a huge effort. Many Alaskans have been involved in that issue, so thank you for that. Are there any committee questions? Seeing none. Is there any public, I'd like to open public testimony. Is there any public testimony regarding Ellen Ganley for the Alcohol Beverage Control Board? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to close public testimony. Again, thank you, Ellen. Appreciate you making yourself available. The next appointee is Tom Manning of Juneau. He is an applicant for the industry seat for the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. Mr. Manning, are you online? I don't see him signed up either. Okay. Next, for the Big Game Commercial Services Board, we have Dave Jones of Kodiak. He is the applicant for the licensed transporter seat. There are 9 seats on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Mr. Jones?
Yes, good afternoon. I'm in Kodiak. My name's James David Jones, but most people know me by my middle name, Dave. And this is my second term on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. I bring kind of a broad background. I'm currently a marine transporter. I have been doing that a little bit over the last several years. I'm also the president of our local charter boat association, and many of our members are also marine transporters, so I gain knowledge on the subject through them as well. I have a lot of background in commercial aviation and air taxi operations and transporting basically big game hunters and their equipment by air as well. I'm not a big game guide, of course, but I am a sport fishing guide, so I understand, I guess, the guide industry from that perspective. So I think I have a broad background, and I understand the issues that come before the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and I'd like to continue serving on it. It's been satisfying over the past 3 years, and I've learned a lot, and hopefully I'm getting better at it.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Are there any committee questions? Okay. Seeing none, I'd like to open public testimony. Are there any members of the public that would like to provide testimony on this applicant? Okay. Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Next, we have Kelly Vrem of Palmer, who is the applicant for the licensed guide seat on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Mr. Vrem.
Good afternoon. Thanks for hearing me. My name is Kelly Vrem. I'm currently living in Sutton. I've been here for about 7 years now. I thoroughly enjoy it. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I received my assistant guide license in 1973, and since 1977, I've been a registered guide. Like Mr. Jones, this is my first reappointment to the board. I served 3 years previously. I've enjoyed my time on the board, and I feel like I need to give something back to the industry that's been pretty nice to me over the years. And I just feel like now I'm hitting my stride. I'm starting to learn the ropes and understand the process a little bit better, and I'm looking forward to serving the next term if you'll have me.
Thank you, Mr. Vrem, and we sure appreciate your service. We've heard from many people that as it takes a while to get in the mode of what the boards are doing, and certainly appreciate your interest in serving. Any committee questions? Senator Giesel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I may have missed it, but what seat designation would you be filling, Mr. Vrem? A transporter?
Senator Giesel, I'm the registered guide member of the board.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, I'd like to open public testimony on Mr. Vrem's application for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Okay, seeing no...
Chair Dave Jones from Kodiak.
Mr. Jones, please proceed.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that it's been a pleasure to serve with Kelly over the past 3 years, and I find him to be very knowledgeable and very dedicated. And I can't imagine finding a better person to to represent the big game guide industry than Kelly. Okay.
Thank you. Any further public testimony? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. The next appointment is to the Fisherman's Fund Advisory and Appeals Council. The applicant is Donald Stiles of Nome, and the seat is the Yukon-Kuskokwim Arctic seat, one of six on this council. And Mr. Stiles. Okay. So for those individuals who were not able to call in, we will be holding these, as I mentioned earlier, so we'll have another opportunity to ask questions. The next appointment is for the Alaska Labor Relations Agency. The first applicant is Tyler Andrews of Anchorage. It's a six-member board, and this is the management seat. Mr. Andrews?
Hi, my name is Tyler Andrews. I've been on the board since 2008, and it's an opportunity for me to serve the state in an area that I'm knowledgeable in, and I'm proud of the work that the board does. I think we work hard to be a very objective and collaborative group when we have to adjudicate cases, and so I would welcome the opportunity to serve for another 3 years.
Thank you. Are there any committee questions for Mr. Andrews? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to open public testimony for Mr. Andrews' application for the, actually he's a nominee for the Alaska Labor Relations Agency. Okay, seeing no public testimony, I'd like to close public testimony. Thank you, Mr. Andrews.
Thank you.
Next, for the same board, the Alaska Labor Relations Agency, is Lon Needles of Valdez. Again, this is a six-member board, and this applicant is for the labor seat. Mr. Needles?
Hi, Lon Needles. This will be a first appointment for me. I'm looking forward to working with the board. I'm a vice president of Local 71, and I believe I can be fair and unbiased, and looking forward to doing this. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions for Mr. Needles from the committee? Okay. Is there anyone interested in testifying? Okay. Seeing no one interested in testifying, I'll close public testimony. Thank you, Mr. Needles, for calling in and making yourself available to the committee.
Thank you.
The next nominee is for the Real Estate Commission, Tracy Barrickman of Sutton. This is one of seven seats, so it's a seven-seat board, and this is the third judicial district seat for a broker. Tracy?
I'm here.
Thank you. Feel free to introduce yourself and let the committee know why you're interested in serving.
Thank you for your time. While I'm new to the Real Estate Commission, I have served for years on different boards. I understand the difference between, for protecting the public and the differences between what should be handled by the commission and what should be handled, by the Realtors Associations and attorneys and that sort of thing. In addition to that, I have been practicing real estate for over 20 years. I have 20 years in the trenches. I also bring years of experience to the table as not only as a practitioner, but as a broker who supervises many licensees and literally thousands of transactions. I'm also a trainer. I travel statewide and train throughout the state, and I mentor other brokers statewide. So the experience is certainly there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tracy, and thank you for your efforts in educating other Alaskans in your profession. So are there any committee questions for Tracy? Seeing none. Is there any public comment on this nominee? Okay, seeing none, I'll go ahead and close public comment. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
Next, Next, also a nominee for the Real Estate Commission is Marianne Burke of Anchorage. And she is a nominee for the public seat. Marianne?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Marianne Burke, and I'm a nominee for the public position, as you just mentioned. I joined the Real Estate Commission in 2010. At that time, the commission, as well as many other boards and commissions, were facing major obstacles and a lot of real problems to address and solve. We've come a long way in this time, and I'm very proud of the work we have done. There's still things that need to be done, and that's why I'm looking forward and hope for the opportunity to continue serving to get these issues addressed for the benefit of the public protection as well as growth and protection of the industry itself. And I would welcome any questions at this time.
Thank you, Marianne. Are there any committee questions? No. Seeing none. Is there anyone from the public that would like to provide testimony? Okay. Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close public testimony. Thank you, Marianne, for calling in.
Thank you.
Welcome. Next, also for the Real Estate Commission, this is the broker at large seat on the 7-member commission. It's Peggy Ann McConaughey of Juneau, and she is here. Please make yourself real welcome and introduce yourself to the committee, Peggy Ann.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Peggy Ann McConaughey, and I'm a real estate broker here in Juneau, Alaska. I've been licensed since, I like to say, since dirt started, which is 1982, which does seem quite a long time ago. I've been a broker since 1980, I think it's 6. You have a copy of my resume. I've been working in real estate, started out in residential, I was told I was buying my business when I didn't know I was buying my business, but I bought it. We had a residential commercial property management firm. I sold off the property management and residential, but I kept the commercial, which I've been doing since 1992, along with training. So I also teach people real estate, everything you need to know, and to continue with your license throughout the United States. What else? In many ways, I've done a lot of things, especially with the National Association of Realtors, and this is something that I've always wanted to do, is to serve as a member of the Real Estate Commission, because I feel when something gives so much to you, you must give something back, and this I see as a way to give back to the public for being able to provide them real estate services.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Since you're here, Peggy, and I actually have a question. So I know the Real Estate Commission has had some struggles recently, you know, and Marianne had alluded to those just in terms of, you know, the collection of fees and what you're paying and things like that. And so what do you see as the Commission's biggest challenges moving forward?
Well, I think there's maybe several different challenges, but in the collection of fees, that is a separate issue. And one of the things I think the Real Estate Commission really needs to do is to look at the things that it provides, where its revenues are, and how to get them balanced. It's certainly not a board which is supposed to make money, but it certainly needs to figure out how to cover the costs that are directly attributable to the Real Estate Commission. I think that's going to be one of the challenges, is to do what needs to be done to help prove this is the money we make and this is the amount of expenditures we have throughout the year, because I don't believe that any board or commission should be a burden on the state. That's not what they should do, but certainly it should be some type of situation where it balances out and does not cause excessive burden either on the people who are being charged the license fees nor on the state for the services that are provided. So that's one area. The rest of it is that, as we all know, we're in a changing world. I like to say what happens down south tends to eventually roll up, and I actually think the Real Estate Commission has the benefit of being able to look at other states' other real estate commissions, see what issues they have had there, and maybe get ahead of any issues to be able to really be able to protect the public in what is a constantly changing environment, whether it's because of the internet and the way that changes the way people buy and sell and rent real estate, or just the way we do it, you know, back here in Juneau. We need to look at those issues, see if we can get ahead of them as far as what problems they've had down south to ensure that we don't have those problems roll uphill.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to congratulate you on being a history major and finding a job. That's
we history majors can do anything. We can tell you that.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you. Follow-up?
American history.
Thank you. Is anyone from the public interested in providing testimony? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close public testimony. Thank you, Peggy Ann, for braving the weather today to come to the Capitol. Thank you. We do have one other nominee for the Real Estate Commission. However, Cynthia Cartledge is not in the country at this time, so we will be hearing from her at a later date. But I do want to go back up the calendar to Andre Horton of Anchorage, who is now online. This is the nominee for the Alaska State Board of Public Accountancy, which should be the first tab in your binders, members. And this nominee is for the Certified Public Accountant seat. Andre, please feel free to introduce yourself to the committee.
Yes, my name is Andre Horton, and this is my second term for the State Board of Accountancy being a public member. Actually, I've been raised here in Alaska, and someone knew I kind of liked accounting, but actually I did not go for accounting. I went more towards the business finance route. And thus far, I end up working with a lot of accountants day in day. So I've been enjoying myself in the Board of Accountancy.
Thank you. And so, So your nomination is for the public seat you mentioned?
Yes, my nomination is for the public seat.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. I had incorrectly mentioned that you're the CPA, but I don't want to make you one if you aren't. So,
it's a common confusion with many people when I'm on the board that they wonder if I'm a CPA, and I say, no, I'm not. I'm just, I just make sure all the CPAs on the board stay in check, so to speak.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Andre? Senator Giesel.
Only to say hello to Andre. Hi, Andre.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good to see the weather down there.
Okay. Thank you for making yourself available. Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on this nominee? Okay. Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close public testimony. So again, for the members, we have provided you with information on all of the the nominees. We will not be moving them out at this time because we will wait until we have the lion's share, which is quite a number before this committee. So if there are any follow-up questions, we have talked to those who've made themselves available, opened and closed public testimony. For those that we have not spoken to, we will be reviewing them at a further date. So. Next on the agenda is Senate Bill 53 by Senator Giesel. This is an act relating to advanced practice registered nursing and relating to certified direct entry midwifery and providing for an effective date. We have heard this bill and opened and closed public testimony on March 10th. So my intent this afternoon is to take any members' questions and look to the will of the committee. Are there any questions from committee members on Senate Bill 53? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wondered if you would be willing to hear from Sarah Chambers from the Division of Licensing related to the fiscal note.
Absolutely. Sarah, you're welcome to the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Operations Manager for the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, and with me is our Division Director, Jenny Hovenden. Thank you for inviting us up to speak to the fiscal note. I appreciate the opportunity to clarify a couple of concerns regarding the fiscal note. Very briefly, I would like to let the committee know that we are reviewing the fiscal note and looking at an opportunity to actually reduce it. That process has not been completed, but it is one that I'm going to be moving forward. It appears that some of the programs that will have statutory changes will not need conforming regulation changes, and there are other programs that may, but all in all, that would be a reduction in the fiscal note. So that is something that we are working to complete in the next few days and make sure that that moves forward. I also would like to clarify that the expenses that are incurred by licensing boards are in fact covered by their licensing fees. My statement at the last hearing that these would not impact licensing fees is based on really the assumption that $2,500 is not a large expense and would not really be that tipping point that would push licensing fees over the edge to require a change, but want to ensure that that my statement was clear to members of the committee that these costs are to be borne by licensees as is required under state law.
Thank you. And for those listening in, could you briefly review the amount of the fiscal note?
Yes, Madam Chair. Currently, the fiscal note stands at $15,000. That would be costs incurred by five different licensing boards that would, under this fiscal note, were identified as needing regulation changes estimated at $2,500 per licensing program.
Could you repeat that? You said 200 and, I'm sorry, the amount per licensing program?
$2,500 per program is our estimated average cost of promulgating an average regulations program, an average regulations change per program, and there are five boards affected, plus the division itself under centralized licensing regulations would need to make some title changes as well to conform to the statute change. So the current fiscal note is at $15,000 spread across a variety of licensing programs, and I do anticipate that to change.
And will the division also absorb some of those costs, or will they all be absorbed by the different licensing programs?
Madam Chair, each licensing program will have to bear the cost of their own regulation changes. The centralized change is simply the title change to the type of licensees that are affected. The advanced practice registered nurse title will need to be inserted into centralized regulations where the fee is assessed for that program, and that change would be borne by the Board of Nursing.
Thank you. Senator Giesel.
So just for clarification, Ms. Chambers, let's say the Board of Professional Counselors already had a regulatory project going forward. So at these regulation changes that would need to be made could be tagged onto that. What would that do to the cost of making these regulatory changes?
Thank you. Senator Giesel, through the chair, I will encourage each of these licensing programs, these boards, to include these changes where they already have an existing program or may have one coming up with an appropriate window of time to be responsive. That would bring the cost to zero, and there would be no additional authority needed for those programs. If the authority is granted through the fiscal note and we don't use the authority, then through the management plan, we'll back that back out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members?
Okay.
Seeing none, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 53, version 29LS0043/N from this committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objections? Seeing no objections, the bill has passed out. So we will take a brief at ease to sign the documents. Commerce Committee. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 39, the repeal of the film production tax credit. This is the fifth hearing we've had On Senate Bill 39, we held public testimony, and that closed on March 3rd. Thank you, Senator Giesel, for running that meeting. It's the chair's intent today to address a technical amendment, take any members' questions, and then look to the will of the committee. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number one.
Thank you. So moved. I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Ellis.
I'm glad someone caught this. It is a major mistake or flaw in the legislation. I don't know the fairest way to characterize it, but someone's brought it to our attention. If it's not corrected here, and I expect it will be, we would have opened ourselves up to significant legal or financial problems by folks that could petition by being treated unfairly. But I expect it will be fixed, and I have no objection to the adoption of the amendment.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to welcome my legislative aide, Weston Eiler, to explain the amendment, which is before the members.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Weston Eiler, staff to Senator Costello and the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Amendment number one is a technical correction, largely to conform to existing statute. There have been several iterations of this program in statute as the program has evolved and been revised over several years. It's a one-word amendment featured on page 3, line 22, removing the word 3 and inserting the word 6. Thus expanding it from 3 to 6 years. This is to avoid a basically regulatory takings claim. Basically, as the government provides a credit or something is extended to someone taking advantage of these incentives, it is proper and basically case law stipulates that those claims must be honored, those credits must be honored, and any sort of taking or preemptive taking or removal of those credits could constitute a violation. Case law has had courts ruled against governments have had to pay this back previously. So it is a technical amendment, Madam Chair. We also have Emily Nauman, the drafter from Legislative Legal, on the line that can speak more about the legal principle and any case law precedent.
Thank you, Weston. Do members have any questions of either Weston or Emily Nauman, who's online? Thank you, Weston. Would the sponsor of the bill like to comment on the amendment? Welcome, Senator Stoltz.
Bill Stoltz, Senate District F. We've gone through this a lot of iterations. It's certainly not technical. It's very substantive, but certainly technically it was an omission or a commission of an inadvertency through going through these drafts, but I wouldn't characterize it as technical, because it's an incredibly substantive legal and fiscal issue. So I appreciate all the iterations that this is fixed or has an opportunity to be fixed.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Stoltz is the sponsor of this bill, and do you support this amendment?
Madam Chair, esteemed Senate President, yes. I will follow the advice, and certainly, and also, I think Senator Ellis was dead spot on. It's better late than never to fix this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions that the members have for the sponsor on either the amendment or the bill itself? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Stoltz.
Can I take 15 seconds, Madam Chair?
Absolutely.
Express my appreciation for putting an incredible amount of time on this issue and providing the public forum. Although I wasn't here, I was watching a lot of it and listening to a lot of it. I am incredibly appreciative to the amount of committee work that was put in and due diligence exploring this issue. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. That I'd like to entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 39, version 29, LS0097/HELO, as amended from this committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Object.
Seeing objection, Will the clerk please call the roll?
Madam Chair, can we hear the objection?
It would be typical.
I'm sorry.
It would be good form to allow me to speak to my objection, please.
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair, I just want to make a brief statement that I'm very disappointed to see the bill leave this committee today, though it's not a big surprise, frankly. As you know, the goal of the Alaska Film and Production Incentives are to diversify the Alaska economy. That's something that every politician of whom I'm aware has talked about, the need to diversify the economy. And that was the goal, is the goal of this program, a shared goal among folks. And it's worked. We've made steady progress, and more to come. More could come. Since improvements to the program have taken effect, we've seen Alaska hire increase. And Madam Chair, I won't go into any major history lesson, but you were involved and you remember the Alaskanization of the program that has been successful, the abbreviated sunset time frame, the increased audit opportunities for the program above and beyond most other programs. So we've made some upgrades, some common sense improvements that were well advised and were a collaborative effort. So in this committee, we've heard about new companies forming to capture new high-tech markets in post-production and editing. And most importantly, we've heard from young people eager to continue their careers here in Alaska. And I think of the young man from Homer who contacted me. I'm not sure if he was aware of my position on the legislation, but he was begging me not to approve the legislation so that he could stay in Alaska as a young Alaskan and not have to move outside to develop his career and find his livelihood here in Alaska, telling Alaska stories here in the state that he loves. I told him I would do my best and share his thoughts with this committee. So, Madam Chair, I'm grateful to all the Alaskans who took time out of their lives, and there were many more. There were thousands of people are impacted. Hundreds are directly employed, and scores were able to testify. So I really appreciate those Alaskans who took the time to talk about the jobs and opportunities brought by the production incentives. Madam Chair, the main part of my objection that I'm speaking to at this moment is that the governor made the difficult decision to shut down the program. He shut it down. Nothing is moving forward. Nothing new is going through the process. And in all honesty, I'll be the first to say that's not an unreasonable position for the governor, the chief executive, to take given the state's fiscal circumstance. This means that Alaska is not permanently closed to this multi-billion dollar industry. It means that we are not progressing. The program is suspended or shut down. So there is no additional obligation. But it doesn't mean we're permanent. It means that we're not permanently closed. And Madam Chair, finally, that's in sharp contrast to the bill under consideration today, which when passed tells this global multi-billion dollar industry that Alaska is permanently closed for business. That'd be a terrible message to send. Some folks seem intent on doing that, but I just think it's ill-advised. This bill essentially, largely, kills an industry and hurts a lot of Alaska small businesses. I can't think that's the intention, but I think that will be the practical import of the legislation if it becomes law, and tells the folks here in Alaska that there is no hope for their future in this industry for all intents and purposes. I think that's unfortunate. I think it's unnecessary. It doesn't need to happen permanently for all time. We could just suspend the program until fiscal circumstances warrant revisiting the issue. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for allowing me to speak to my objection. That is standard operating procedure, and I appreciate your time very much. Thank you.
Thank you. And I also wanted to take a moment and publicly recognize Senator Ellis as the author of the Film Tax Incentive Program. Certainly, we've seen an impact on Alaska. 146 productions came to our state using $38 million in credits out of the $200 million cap. And I appreciate all the effort that you've put into this program, and I too have worked on this program in the previous legislature, trying to Alaskanize it, and I think that made it better. As we move forward in this fiscally strained environment, I think it would be prudent for our Senate Finance Committee to take a look at the legislation and look closely at any differences that might exist between what the governor has proposed for the program versus what this bill tries to achieve with it, which is to essentially take it off the books. With that, I'm going to call a brief at ease. Thank you for your patience for those who are listening to this important hearing on this important program. Previously, I forgot to remove my objection to the amendment, and so at this point, I will remove my objection to the amendment, and seeing no further objection, so moved. So we now have before us Senate Bill 39 as amended by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, I will move again. Senate Bill number 39, version 29, LS0097-H, as amended, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes from this committee to the next.
And Madam Chair, I will maintain my objection to the motion respectfully.
Would you like to speak to your objection?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Already done.
Thank you. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Senator Giesel?
Yes.
Senator Meyer?
Yes.
Senator Stephen?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
No.
Chair Costello?
Yes. And so with a vote of 4-1, Senate Bill 39 as amended with moves from the committee with accompanying fiscal notes, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign the documentation. Commerce Committee back to order. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 60, establishing the Marijuana Control Board. This is the second hearing on the bill, and my intention is to take public testimony and set the bill aside. And for future hearings, I'd like to remind anyone needing to testify via off-net, please sign up with my office in advance, because our LIOs do exist for public testimony, and we'd like to use those resources. So, with that, I'd like to open public testimony on Senate Bill 60. Is there anyone here in Juneau who would like to testify? Okay, seeing none, no one. I have online Anchorage LIO, Kim Cole with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. Kim, are you there?
Yes, my name is Kim Cole, and I'm from Anchorage, and I'm calling to support this bill in order to create a separate marijuana control board. This makes sense for many reasons, both financially as well as in terms of who is actually creating the regulations for this industry. And the one thing I'd like to point out is that the bill states that it can be up to two individuals representing the cannabis industry, but I would like to suggest that we really do need to have those two people, not just one from the industry, because all aspects of the cannabis industry are so far-reaching. There are cultivators, processors of non-consumables that concentrate lotions, as well as the processors of consumable edible products. And we also have places to purchase these substances, such as in retail stores. We might also have potential registrations for special events, such as cannabis cups, something that would resemble a beer garden, cafes, those kinds of ideas. The point being that no one person can know everything there is to know because it is so incredibly far-reaching. So it's really imperative to have these two representatives on the board in order to cover all the bases. I also really like the staggered appointments for the board members in order to create consistency and forward momentum throughout the years. Thank you very much for letting me speak.
Thank you, Kim. Are there any questions from committee members? Okay, seeing none. Is there anyone else? Oh. Hot off the press, we have somebody, I think, off net. Oh, Bruce Schulte from Anchorage with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. Bruce, please feel free to provide your comments.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Bruce Schulte. I'm a spokesman for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. And I was just calling in support of Senate Bill 60. I would just echo Kim's comments. I do think it's very important to have not just one, but two knowledgeable people on that board that can represent the industry, and people that can speak to the products and the processes that are being regulated. I would just add two other points I would make. One is the schedule. I think all the aware that the nine-month time frame for the regulatory process actually started on February 24th, so we're all sort of keen to see this board issued up and running so that they can meet their deadline. One other comment I just wanted to offer, I think through the text of the bill, page 4, line, oh my gosh, I just blew right past it, line 8, powers and duties of the board, I noticed that it says the board shall control the cultivation, manufacture, possession, and sale of marijuana in the state, and I just respectfully suggest that perhaps that could be reworded because there probably needs to be a distinction between personal cultivation and possession and commercial cultivation and so forth. So that's just a comment. Perhaps that could be looked at because I wouldn't want the board to get sideways trying to regulate the personal components that are not within their purview. That said, I am generally in support of this board, and I appreciate the time to offer my thoughts.
Thank you. Are there any committee questions for Bruce? Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else online who would like to testify on Senate Bill 60? Are you seeing none? Cynthia Franklin, you're here today, and I would like to invite you to the table. I actually have a question for you.
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Cynthia Franklin. I'm the Director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board.
Great, welcome. So the board membership includes two industry representatives, and since we don't have this industry in Alaska, my question is, where then do we get people with this expertise?
Madam Chair, the industry representation on this board mirrors industry representation on the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. The anticipated staffing of the board at the beginning, I believe we would be asking the Governor's Office of Boards and Commissions to be looking for individuals who have identified themselves as potential members of the industry. There are a couple of already formed organizations, the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation being one of those, that has attracted a membership from individuals who have identified themselves as potential industry. Additionally, Alaska already has marijuana and has many individuals in this state that know a lot about this plant and about cultivating this plant. The regulations and statutes relating to the type of licenses that are going to be issued may include an opportunity for individuals who have previously grown the plant in more than a personal amount to enter the commercialized legal market. And in that case, I do think that we will have a number of individuals who will be able to, for a better term, out themselves as knowing a substantial amount of information about the industry prior to legalization. I don't know that me or the board would have any input into who is selected for eventually for marijuana control board, because the gubernatorial appointment process through the boards and commission's office. Often those decisions are made without the input of the agency. But I believe that anyone who has business experience and has identified themselves as being interested in the industry and has joined an organization such as the CRCL or a similar organization, there are a couple of others that have cropped up already in Alaska, would certainly could potentially demonstrate to the Office of Boards and Commissions enough experience to fill industry seats in the beginning. The other thing that I've suggested is that with those staggered terms, that perhaps the industry seat could be a short term fill. So, for instance, the one-year term, at the beginning, you could potentially identify someone from an organization such as the CRCL, and if that person does not end up actually participating or having a viable business or getting a license, then that board seat could be moved over to another individual who has ended up being part of the industry. It's a bit of a chicken and egg problem, but I think it's imminently solvable. The language of the bill provides may and up to for that board designation, as opposed to the other designations, which are shall. So if there is, you know, if the Office of Boards and Commissions does not identify someone, that doesn't mean that the board cannot be created. And so there could be a wait and see approach from that office. My personal impression from the individuals who have contacted me is there are a lot of very professional, business-minded people in Alaska who are very interested in this industry and interested in beginning a business, and many of them would be appropriate candidates, including those who have joined and are members of the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Honor. Just wondering if you had any comment on page 4 or section 8, the issue that was brought up about the personal and commercial issue. Does that concern you at all in the way this reads now?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, it does not concern me. That language is lifted directly out of Title IV, and those are the verbs that the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board uses in alcohol. One of the things that's important for everyone to remember, and it's a little counterintuitive at first, is that we need to make sure that the authority of the board is not limited to those individuals who have licenses. Because if you set the board up that way, then you are eliminating the board as a resource in shutting down the black market. So I believe that one of our biggest challenges in this industry is going to be drawing that bright line between that personal grow and a commercial grow, and the board needs authority over possession in order not only to license individuals involved in commercial growing, but to shut down individuals who are using the personal grow provision 1738020 to essentially run a commercial grow operation. So I think it's important that the language mirrors Title IV.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you know, one of the issues that I hear from my office is the protecting young people. And so do you see a seat on that board representing parents or anyone who could represent, you know, the interests of the safety of our youth?
Madam Chair, absolutely. The public health designation on this board is, and the public safety designations are the result of stakeholder feedback on the Title IV and Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, that there really needs to be representation. Many of the public health members of the Alcoholic Beverage Stakeholder Group were public health, were involved in the public health community as regards underage consumption of alcohol. And I do think that many of the strongest candidates for a public health designation on a marijuana control board would be individuals who have experience in the public health arena as it relates to underage substance abuse. So I see those as being excellent candidates both for a public health designation and also for a general public member designation.
Thank you. Senator Meyer had brought up at our previous hearing on this bill the the sort of the sticker shock of the fiscal note, and upon my investigation in this, that actually is more related to staff cost than it is the board membership. But when we first looked at that, the first question that comes to mind is, do we need a new board? Can we somehow mimic the ABC board or use the ABC board? So I wanted to give you an opportunity to answer the question, how do you see the Marijuana Control Board membership as needing to be different than the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, if you do see that?
Madam Chair, at first, having worked with the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and being proud of their work, my initial reaction when the ballot measure passed was, we don't need a new board. We're a good board. We can do this work. However, when you think about the representation that already exists on the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, two industry members and three public members, one of whom must be from a rural area, and you start trying to tinker with adding appropriate representation from the marijuana industry, I was very concerned at the concept of having a seven-member board that was dominated by industry. If we added only two marijuana industry, that would be seven members, and the four industry members could always outvote the three public members. Then when you add two public members to get back to an odd number, you have a nine-member board, and you're talking about that board needing to meet both on alcohol and marijuana issues. One of the interesting things about the Alcoholic Beverage Board meetings is they are very detailed meetings that deal with issues license by license. So they only meet five times a year, but they're very busy meetings where individual licensees are appearing before the board on individual licensee issues. So when we really started looking at what a board meeting might look like, it appeared to make more sense to flip the bill for that one extra board member to split the work across two boards. There was an idea that was floated early on of sharing public members or public health or public safety designees across boards. The issue with that is these are volunteer boards. And so when we started thinking about what individual we might find who had the time to work on two boards and to meet 10 times a year as opposed to five times a year, we were really decreasing the pool of potential candidates for those public membership positions. So that's how we ended up here. With a lot of debate, a lot of discussion, and really looking at the way that the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board meetings work in reality and trying to picture that for marijuana. And what we ended up with here was a way to really call upon the experience of the staff and the enforcement staff and the licensing staff, but at the same time have a workable volunteer board that can address all of the issues in a reasonable time frame, where we could potentially see a good quality pool of candidates for board membership.
I have one final question. So in the world of boards and commissions, usually the executive director is carrying out the decisions by the members of the board. And in this configuration, the background of the executive director, which would be you in this case, is calculated in meeting some of the voices that the board is trying to represent. I mean, do you have an opinion on that? Do you think that that's a departure from the structure, that exists with what the role of executive directors is in most cases across the state, across other states, just in general?
Madam Chair, I heard that and thought about that, and I do think that considering the background experience of the director in the composition of the board is unusual. What I will say about that decision is that it was an extremely controversial, hard-fought debate between members of the stakeholders group. So the licensing subcommittee, which was chaired by Jeff Jesse of the Mental Health Trust, I really wanted to see the Alcoholic Beverage Board with more designations than just industry. And the whole debate about the size of the board and the practical job of the board and expanding the board, that debate has been had with regard to the 5-member Alcoholic Beverage Control Board over the past 2.5 years. The compromise that was reached, taking into account the background of the director, is very unusual. I agree. But the director remains, by statute, a non-voting member of the board. So I believe that what it is intended to represent is an acknowledgement that much of the board's work is designated to the director on a day-to-day basis because they are volunteers and only meet 5 times a year, and that the director's background in bringing items to the board for its agenda has an influence, you know, not an undue influence, but has some influence. And there's a recognition there of the real world practical way that this board and agency function together. So that was brought into our Marijuana Control Board bill as a recognition that that work has been done with regards to the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, and it was valuable work, and we ended up with a product that was more supported across the stakeholders, not only by the industry, but by the public health stakeholders and the public safety stakeholders, who certainly have a role and an interest in how marijuana is going to be regulated.
Thank you, and I've already put on record my concern just when it comes to hiring. If you've got 2 equally qualified applicants, in the case that we are looking for a new executive director, that the one who has the background that fits into the configuration might somehow have a leg up, when in fact, you know, this is such a departure that it might be a little sticky. But I do understand the intent to try to get as much for the reduced number of the board and the size of the board. So. Any questions? Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarifying question for Ms. Franklin. I'm hearing you say the board meets 5 times a year. I'm looking in the bill, it says meet at call of the chair. Am I confused? The 5 times a year may be for ABC, or please clarify.
Senator Giesel, through the chair, the Title IV requires the board to meet once a year in each jurisdiction.
Okay.
So there is a require, and if that language is not in Senate Bill 60, there were a couple of small provisions in Title IV that got left out of that we were submitting in an amendment, I believe. One was the sunset provision. You won't find that in the original version of the bill. But the meetings, requiring that the board meet in each of the 4 jurisdictions, is a method of attempting to guarantee that both licensees and public in each jurisdiction have an opportunity to actually, at least more of an opportunity to actually appear in person at a board meeting, which is why there's board travel in the fiscal note, because this board actually travels across the state and meets in each jurisdiction. In October of 2014, it was my privilege to attend my first board meeting in Nome, and it made a difference that we were in Nome and not on the phone a meeting. The reason for the 5th meeting of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board is because we have so many alcohol licensees that 4 meetings is not enough. So there's an extra meeting each year just to get the board's business done, and typically that extra meeting is also held in Anchorage. But the statutory requirement for the alcoholic beverage meetings is that they meet at least 4 times per year and at the call of the chair, and that one of those meetings be in each of the 4 districts in Alaska.
Senator Giesel?
So I guess I'm still not sure what the answer was. We're dealing with the marijuana board here.
Yes.
It says it meets at call of the chair. There's no specified number. I'm confused.
Senator Giesel, through the chair, understandable that you're confused. The language should be there mimicking, mirroring the language in Title IV requiring the board to meet 4 times a year, at least 4 times a year, once in each jurisdiction. And we expect that to be coming forward with the sunset language that's also missing from the bill.
Thank you. And if you could provide that proposed amendment to my office, we'll definitely pass it around to the members. Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We appreciate your presentation and your help. I several years ago, I voted not to move the ABC board from public safety to commerce. But I lost that vote. I think it was 18-2 in the state Senate. And now we contemplate having marijuana, the marijuana board, in commerce, not in public safety. Correct? And I think that, yes, if you could confirm that. But what I wanted to pose to you is, what have you felt has been the change in culture, if any, or any practical import? Or I don't know why the industry was so hell-bent on, and I think that's an accurate, fair characterization, of their effort to move. It was a lobbying effort like I'd never seen before, for that industry at least here. And I worked with them on other issues, on alcohol tax issues and use of tax, existing alcohol tax for the effects of the legal drug. But the lobbying effort to move seemed very, very important to them, to go from public safety to commerce. Can you just comment on that, what's happened, and what, if there's any practical import for us locating, mirroring the ABC board with the alcohol board and having it not in public safety but in commerce?
Senator Ellis, through the chair, the reason why the Marijuana Control Board is located in commerce is because AS 1738 says it is. So if you go to the ballot measure, it based the provision that permits the legislature to create a marijuana control board says it shall be created in the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. So that is the reason why this board is proposed to be in commerce. I was not with the agency when the move from public safety to commerce happened. I have heard a lot about it in my role as director. I believe that based on my conversations with CHAR, the lobbying organization, and individual licensees, that the push to move the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board into commerce had to do with a sense by the industry and by some licensees that the existence of the agency in public safety automatically created an adversarial relationship between the board and the industry, even though the industry is represented on the board. What I have seen since I arrived at the agency and in working on our legislative audit procedure is I believe both a result of what happened here in the legislature in 2012 regarding the location of the board, and also as a result of this fairly intensive work that this stakeholders group has done with stakeholders, including the industry, are working on Title IV. But I have observed, as a former prosecutor who was aware of the work of this board from the other end, from the criminal justice end, I have observed a shift in the board that they are actually more aware of their public safety role. I mean, I can't really say what their awareness level was when they were in public safety because I wasn't with the board at that time. But I certainly, in the board meetings that I have attended, have observed a keen awareness of their role in protecting the safety of the public from the legal substance, alcohol. And through the legislative audit process, the stakeholders work group, and the controversy over the move into commerce, I believe that the board is more attuned than ever to the concept that they are a gatekeeper for these licensees. So I sense an improved response from the board. I'm not saying that that's because they're in commerce, but it may be because they're more sensitive to sentiments regarding public health and public safety because of the controversy around that move. I think they're in a positive place right now.
Senator Ellis.
Madam Chair, thank you for that explanation. I appreciate that. It's very logical that the new legal marijuana industry would want to be in commerce, not in public safety. And so that was written into the initiative, and they won the vote, and we're here to sort out the details. So thank you for your help with the history.
Seeing no further questions. Cynthia, I just want to publicly thank you for your expertise. You certainly have been a tremendous resource. We have three marijuana-related pieces of legislation before the legislature, and I'm sure at every hearing you have just been a real resource. I want to thank you for your efforts and for attending today. Sincerely appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. I wasn't going to ask a question, but I can't resist. Because Senator Ellis is correct. It was very controversial moving from public safety to commerce, the ABC board. And, you know, the more I hear about marijuana, maybe you're better off in HESS, Health and Social Services. But, so who knows? But regardless, and I'm going to go way back into history here. When I was on the Anchorage Assembly in the 90s, we used to complain about some bars that were rowdy and were serving minors, and there were fights and sometimes even people getting shot. And we would look at the police reports, and then we would make a recommendation to allow the license to go forward or not. And then it would go to the ABC board. And a lot of times, ABC board would overturn our recommendation at the local level. And I'm just wondering, how often do you pull a license from a licensee? I mean, they have to be very delinquent, I would think. Because, and the concern was always that the license for dispensary is like $250,000 investment. So that was always our concern, too, even at our level. So I'm just curious, how often do you actually pull a license?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, I've actually seen quite a lot of activity against licenses in the time that I've been with the board, just since September of 2014. Not only some substantial suspensions and fines, but a revocation of a license in Kodiak that's on appeal right now, where the board basically found that the licensee had strayed outside the terms of their common carrier license. So I do understand the tension between the local government objection or protest and the ABC's granting of the license or transfer. However, I have heard our board chair tell the city council members in Nome when we were at our board meeting in October that if a local governing body objects, and if you look at 411-490, which is the actual provision in Title IV that provides for local governing body objection, if they object to the issuance, transfer, or renewal of a license, the board shall uphold the local governing body's decision unless the board finds that that determination was arbitrary and capricious and unreasonable, all three of those adjectives. The City of Nome protested in December the transfer of a beverage dispensary license, and it was a one-paragraph letter from the City Council that said, we object to the transfer of this license because Nome has too many liquor licenses. The Alcoholic Beverage Control Board upheld that protest in December and killed that license. So as I was explaining to Senator Ellis, in my time with the agency, I have seen the board react very strongly to public safety concerns, issue quite a number of stiff suspensions and fines, revoke and deny the transfer of licenses just in the three board meetings that I have attended so far.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. And so we would expect that same kind of enforcement with the marijuana stores.
And Senator Meyer, through the chair, I mean, a couple of the regulations and rules around marijuana are going to affect the scenario that you described. I have been a vocal advocate for making licenses non-transferable in marijuana because the market value that you're talking about, the $250,000 secondary market value of a license, would not exist were it not for the limitation on alcohol licenses combined with the transferability. And if we address those issues at the outset with marijuana, we can avoid some of the less desirable effects of regulation that we've seen in alcohol, where people have this property interest in this license, and it's led to some undesirable outcomes at the board level.
Great. Well, I appreciate that. You know, and as I mentioned last time, you know, my concern is that they might still try to sell spice and other things at these type of stores or sell to minors as with alcohol. But I think if we enforce it very strictly and, the word will get out just like it has in the alcohol business.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you.
I will be keeping the public testimony for Senate Bill 60 open. But we will be adjourning the meeting. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 17th at 1:30, and today it is now 2:51, and the meeting is adjourned.